Hello, AF Nation, and welcome to another edition of Arena Football Radio's AF Nation podcast. I am your host, Chris Hopkins, today joined by BJ Picard. And on today's episode, we will be getting everybody ready for the Arena Bowl, as that's coming up on Saturday, August 23rd. Arena Bowl 27 will be on ESPN and can be seen at 8 o'clock Eastern. And today on our episode of the show, we're just going to discuss some possible award winners, just kind of recap the 2014 season, who was our biggest surprise, biggest disappointment, newcomer, breakout star. And we'll go over the all-arena teams, which were announced last week, both offensive and defensive teams. And also just wanted to let everybody know that we will be hosting the podcast later this week when BJ and I are in Cleveland for the Arena Bowl. So, BJ, let's start with the all-arena teams.
All right.
So, like I said, the teams were announced last week. The defensive team coming out on Wednesday and the offensive team coming out on Thursday. And I think the overarching theme of both teams was just the first-time members on the first-team all-arena. Highlighting that would be Nick Davila. Even though he's won an MVP and two Arena Bowls, this was his first time being named first-team All-Arena. In addition, we had other first-timers on the offense with Dominic Goodman, Marco Thomas, and Antonio Narcisse. BJ, were there any surprises or snubs that you felt on the teams?
Well, on the offensive team, I think, and AFL coaches vote on this. It's not okay. A league office award. It's not a fan vote. It's strictly AFL coaches putting in their ballots for all arena teams. And I think they got it right on this one. I really don't have too many issues with anything on the offensive team. If you're looking at receivers, I could make an argument for Joe Hills in Tampa Bay, who is always among the league's elite receivers. And Preche Rodriguez, if he played a full season in Pittsburgh, I think definitely would have been certainly an all-arena selection, if not a first-team all-arena selection. When he played, he's just dominant. And actually, that's why over the weekend he signed a contract with the Chicago Bears. So he'll be up here in the Windy City with us. Mm. But I think if he played a full season and didn't have the injury setbacks, I think he would have been a first-team all-arena selection. But other than that, you can make an argument at the kicker position. I think Nick Pertweet is hands down the first-team all-arena. He's just got the stats. And I think Julian Roush played a really, really good season for the Pittsburgh Power, too. He's very consistent, really solidified himself as that team's kicker, where they've had some issues really since their inception with consistency there. But I could see where you make an argument for Aaron Petrie. Three game-winning field goals this season?
Yeah.
Very consistent, very reliable kicker. I think you can make an argument for him, but on the offensive end, I really don't think that anybody is too snubbed. When people talk about snubs, you always have to consider, okay, well, who would you take out? And to me, I don't see anybody on the offensive side where I go, how did that guy get selected? I think they're all really good picks. I can't argue too much with any of them, but I could see making an argument for a few more guys.
All right, and I guess maybe on the defensive end, a lot of other first-timers on the both first team and second team. James Ruffin kind of led the way there, as he led the league with 14 sacks with the shock this season. We had a couple rookies actually on the first team, with Teddy Jennings from Philadelphia and Varma Soni from Portland, both having great years. Sony with Portland, and like I said, Teddy Jennings with the Soul. Now, Tanner Varner, there was some talk that maybe, it's said that he was always the best player on the field, but maybe not. He didn't have the stats that maybe a Bryce Pila or, other guys around the league had. So maybe, PJ, could you explain maybe why Tanner Varner got the nod over some other players?
Yeah, I think it's true what you said, that when you watch a game, he's the playmaker. You can watch and you see, well, he's the best player on the field. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he has, eye-popping stats when you're just looking at him at a stat sheet. I think Terrence Moore, Jack linebacker in Spokane, mm-hmm. certainly has a case to be made for him being a first-team all-arena Jack linebacker. I think he led the team in tackles, yeah. Always around the ball, fumble recoveries, interceptions, forced fumbles. You know, he has grown into a really quality Jack linebacker in the league, and I think you can make a strong argument that Terrence Moore deserves to be on this list. If not first team, certainly second team. I would keep Bryce Bielo there. I mean, he had, what, 12 takeaways? In
what was that streak he had?
Yeah, it was like the first 10 games of the year he had a takeaway.
As a rookie.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he had an outstanding season. I don't think you can argue at all with Bryce Bielo.
Yeah.
And I think he's a strong contender for Net 10 Wireless Rookie of the Year, too.
True.
You know, despite this being an offensive game, you know, it's also a game about stops.
Yeah.
And Bryce, he did a tremendous job keeping Portland in games.
Yeah.
With that being such a young team this year.
At the end of the game, you need more possessions than the other team, and he gave his offense a chance.
It's a game that's all about possessions.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can also make the argument for Gene Fenor down in Tampa Bay. Jack linebacker led the league in tackles, set a Storm franchise record for tackles. I will be the first to admit that I personally find tackles to be an outrageously overrated statistic in arena football. Because to me, if you're a defensive back and you're getting a lot of tackles, that means the guys are catching a lot of passes in front of you because you don't see a whole lot of runs. It's different than the outdoor game where you have defensive backs stepping up to make tackles in the running game. I don't judge defensive backs based on tackles in the AFL. To me, it's about pass breakups and interceptions. But that's just me, and I don't get a vote on the all-arena teams anyway. But if I could put myself in the mindset of an AFL coach and say, well, how did Gene Fenor not get selected? I think, you know, that might be the reason. That being said, he's always around the ball. You know, that's important. Tackles, they might be overrated, but it's still an important statistic.
He's still got to tackle.
Yeah, I mean, on-base percentage may be a better indicator of how good you are as a baseball player, but batting average shouldn't be completely discounted.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think Gene Fenor has a case to be made. You know, looking at the defensive backs, Virgil Gray, I know he was hurt for almost half the season, but he had 11 interceptions in 11 games.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, the ratio is 1-1.
Exactly. And then you look at Dominic Jones. Again, he doesn't really have the stats. I think he's got a lot of pass breakups.
Yeah, he's got like 27 pass breakups.
Right, right. He didn't get a lot of interceptions this year, but... He's another guy kind of in the same mold as Tanner Varner, where you watch him play and you go, well, that guy is a football player.
Yeah.
So I think an argument could be made there. At kick returner, you know, Larry Beavers had a lot of stats. He gets a lot of opportunities.
Yeah, exactly.
I think if A.J. Cruz would have started the season in L.A. and played the whole year, I think we would be talking about him. He only had a string of 4 or 5 games there, but during that streak, he was really exceptional. You know, he had a couple of highlight reel returns there at both, you know, kickoff returns and field goal returns. So, A.J. Cruz is, if he sticks around, I think he's somebody to really keep an eye on next season.
Now, could you make the case from possibly, you know, Francis Maco was the second team Mac linebacker, I'm sorry, and Bo Bell was the first team. But Bell only played in 15 games while Maco was the kind of the heart of the number one San Jose defense in all 18 games. Could you make the case for, you know, possibly switching the two since Bell kind of faltered down the stretch, even though he came out of the gates as the best defensive player? I mean, if you would have asked anybody through the first 10 games, Bo Bell would have won Defensive Player of the Year. But then, you know, as the season wore on and the lack of help around him in the LA defense, it started to kind of weigh on him, and you could tell. And, you know, injuries started piling up there. Could you make the case for maybe Francis Maca, you know, switching with him with Bo Bell? Because, like I said, he was there all 18 games. San Jose finished with the number one defense in the league. He had pretty comparable stats to Bo Bell, still a 9.5 sacks.
That's a fair point. I guess if I'm defending Bo Bell, my counter-argument would be Bo Bell was all L.A. had.
Yeah.
Francis Maca surrounded by talent. Jason Stewart, crossover defensive lineman of the year candidate. Rydell, mm-hmm. defensive player of the year candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Sykes, former Rydell defensive player of the year. Terrence Carter, Luis Vasquez. There's a lot of talent in San Jose,
mm-hmm.
especially for pass rushers. I think what Bo Bell was able to do when offenses knew all they had to do was block Bo Bell.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe more impressive than what Francis Maka was able to do. But Francis Maka is an elite player.
Yeah.
I can't argue with that.
Still gets the recognition.
I think Derek Sommers, you know, should get some recognition as well. He switched from defensive end to Mac linebacker this year and didn't miss a beat. If he weren't on the same defensive unit as James Ruffin, I think he probably would have gotten more recognition.
That's true.
But when somebody gets 14 sacks in a season, they're going to...
Yeah, you deserve the spotlight.
Yeah. To me, I'd still have Bo Bell as my first team All-Arena Mac linebacker. But that's just me.
Yeah. I mean, you can't go wrong with either one.
You really can't.
Just a thought. Because I just down the stretch, Bo Bell's production kind of tapered off.
Yeah, and I think because teams keyed on him, you know, he was pretty banged up, and eventually the injury got to him.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, he's one of the few bright spots for LA this season. I think if he sticks around, you know, they've certainly got a building block, if nothing else, on defense.
Oh, yeah. And maybe B.J. Bell just develops into a better player.
But, we'll see. We'll see what happens this week on fourth and last.
Exactly. Bo doesn't have a lot of confidence in his brother making the team. But
apparently not. Did you watch the pilot episode there?
I did catch the pilot. I thought it was interesting. I think the dynamic between Bob McMillan and Brett Bushy, I think that's going to be really interesting. When he told McMillan that he wanted to have the players painted in the KISS face paint during the games, I thought McMillan was going to walk out. Either that or watching Paul Stanley make his own pizza dough. Either one of those is pretty funny.
It's certainly going to be entertaining.
Yeah.
So that airs Tuesday nights.
Yep, 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock Eastern time on AMC, Fourth and Loud.
I think they do an encore showing right after.
Yeah. So, no, I thought it was a good show. I was entertained.
Yeah, it was definitely entertaining.
It's interesting when you're living it every day, so you kind of know what's going on.
Yeah, and the foreshadowing really isn't there when they make it seem like McMillan and his team are going to have a really successful year.
No, don't spoil the end.
Yeah, well, just don't look on our website.
No, it should be a good show. If you like Hard Knocks, I'd definitely turn it
in. Yeah, if you like Hard Knocks, and if you watch Gene Simmons' reality show, Family Jewels, that was pretty
similar?
It's popular. And
okay.
It's Gene. So if you like Gene Simmons, it's more Gene Simmons for you.
If you don't like Gene Simmons, it's more Gene Simmons for you.
Yeah, so. I guess moving on from the All-Arena teams, I guess BJ, we can talk about maybe our biggest surprise and biggest disappointments of the year, whether it's a player or a team. I guess we'll start with the positives. Biggest surprise of the year, obviously, Cleveland. Yeah, you could basically just pick out anybody on their roster besides maybe Dominic Goodman.
You knew Dominic Goodman was a proven commodity.
Yeah. I mean, outside of the Cleveland area of surprises, because, like I said, you can go down the roster and pick out the whole team, even the coaches, just the whole Cleveland Gladiators franchise. One of my biggest surprises came from Iowa, Darius Reynolds. He's always been a consistently, you know, good receiver, but the production he was putting up this year, especially with the inconsistency at quarterback, I mean, kind of just the inconsistency across the team, except for his running mate, Marco Thomas.
Well, yeah, and I mean, that's the interesting thing. Like, Marco Thomas, the Cutters Receiver of the Year this year, just announced this morning, it seemed like he was always head and shoulders above everybody else. You know, his stats were crazy, and they were. But
yeah, for a time,
But look, now, Darius Reynolds is right there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a few yards shy.
Less than 100 yards. And the receptions aren't there, but, I mean, they're tied for touchdowns, both at 39 touchdowns, Reynolds and Thomas.
He's definitely one of my breakout performers
of the
year.
Do you think he benefited from the attention that Marco Thomas was getting?
I would think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess on the other side of the ball, one of my other big surprises was Arvell Nelson, the kind of the do-it-all player on Pittsburgh. He was brought in as a backup quarterback after being a backup with Spokane. He played some time at Jack linebacker this year. I mean, I think he had a couple receptions. He played.
He's just a really good athlete. That trade worked out for both franchises. It was really surprising when Pittsburgh traded Mike Washington over to Spokane for a lineman and Arvell Nelson. But, you know, they found a way to get him on the field, and he turned into one of the better Jack linebackers in the league.
60 tackles, 4 tackles for loss, 5 interceptions, 2 of which he returned for touchdowns, 4 pass breakups.
I mean, it's a good year. It's a good year for a backup quarterback.
That's his first year at Jack linebacker. It's a good year for your first year playing Jack linebacker.
Yeah.
after being a college quarterback and brought into the league as a quarterback.
Yeah. You know, another one of my big surprises was the Orlando Predators. I think when Rob Keefe took over last December, he totally remodeled that franchise.
Okay.
I mean, it was a complete overhaul of the roster.
Yeah.
They had gone from being, I think, the most veteran team in the league by a long shot last year to being one of the youngest this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they, look at their receiving corps: Greg Carr, Khalil Payton, Kendall Tompkins, Gerald Young.
Brought in the veteran like Larry Brackens.
Right, and that
guys.
Was mid-season.
Yeah.
But I think coming into the season, people didn't expect them to win more than five games.
And then going from Boltis to Bernard Morris in the middle of the season, because Boltis showed no signs of why he should be benched,
Other than getting hurt.
Yeah, he was having a great season.
Got Alex Smith.
Yeah, he got Alex Smith, but Kaepernick.
Yes.
And, so to make that change in the middle of the season and still find great success, obviously Bernard Morris is a great quarterback, and he was one of the most dynamic players down the stretch. But Keith had the foresight to see that coming and, pair him up with those great young receivers. Is there a breakout player that kind of stood out to you, or a couple breakout players that stood out to you, BJ?
Shane Austin.
Okay.
And Shane Austin kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Shane Austin would be a big breakout player for me. We also already talked about Darius Reynolds. Mm-hmm. He obviously had the best year of his career.
I thought James Ruffin, he's kind of just been consistently getting better and better. This is his third year in the league, and, obviously the 14 sacks, league lead, and those are career highs. And each year he's increased his number of sacks, and I thought this was finally his breakout year.
Certainly was. Caught the attention of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, he got picked up by the Bucs. And my other breakout was the Cleveland secondary. I know Mario Norman and Laracci Jackson have been good for a couple years, and then they brought in Dominic Jones, but I just didn't think that they were going to be that good. The no-fly zone in Cleveland. And they were, all three of those guys could have been on one of these all-arena teams. Mario Norman got the recognition, obviously getting picked up by the Baltimore Ravens, but I just thought that secondary really set the tone for what Cleveland was about all season long. They really, implemented the tenacity and just the physicality that Cleveland was going to have each week in and week out. Obviously, we had a lot of great rookies that were able to step up. Teddy Jennings, Farmasoni, both first team All Arena defensive players. Greg Carr was a second team. Dominique Curry.
To me, the front runner for Rookie of the Year, Net 10 Rookie of the Year, is going to be Greg Carr.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he put up some really impressive stats. I also, like we talked about earlier, I really like Bryce Pila. I think what he was able to do in Portland was really impressive.
Now, talk to me about Dominique Curry. He was a rookie this year with San Jose.
Yeah, and he basically filled in for Huey Whittaker.
Uh-huh.
Huey Whittaker got hurt really early on in the season. Dominique Curry, who had some NFL experience, stepped in for him, played receiver, played jack linebacker, played all the special teams, and really excelled wherever he was put. He's a lot like Kerry Reed. He wasn't San Jose's number one receiver, but he's big, he's physical, and he's going to prove that he's the best player on the field whenever he's out. So, I was really impressed with Dominique Curry. I think he's got a legit shot at both Net 10 Wireless Rookie of the Year and J. Lewis Small Playmaker of the Year.
He made his debut week 5 against Arizona, and 2 touchdowns on offense and an interception on defense.
Not a bad way to start.
Fearless.
There you go.
Any other newcomers or, just kind of breakout players that caught your eye?
Well, I think up until the conference championship game, Nathan Stanley played really, really well.
Yeah, he never looked like a rookie up until that game.
Yeah. But, no, I mean, to step in and play quarterback in the AFL, it's not as easy as it might look. And to do it as a rookie against the level of competition that Nathan Stanley saw week in and week out,
mm-hmm.
I thought that was really impressive.
Yeah. He was the starting quarterback when they snapped Arizona's winning streak. That in itself is impressive. Now, I guess not to look too far to the future. Do you see Nathan Stanley being the quarterback in San Jose in the future, or are they going to keep around Russ McDonald?
I would think he'd be a starting quarterback somewhere.
Okay.
If not in San Jose, I think somebody else is going to make him an offer.
I mean, there's definitely teams out there that are in need of
quarterbacks. There are teams that need quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And there are two pretty good ones in San Jose. So I wouldn't think that both of them will stay out there.
Okay.
Both have the capability of starting.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see.
and one of, you know, one of the classic facets of the Arena Bowl game is the Iron Man role, and you know, we like to honor that each year with the Iron Man of the Year. So, who's on your short list for the Iron Man of the Year?
I would probably give the award to Kerry Reed.
That's my guy also.
Yeah. I just think he's he really is a throwback. Because he's their fourth receiver, sometimes third, sometimes second. Fills in wherever they need him. Plays jack linebacker when they need him to. Plays special teams. And he plays it all really, really well. He's just a very consistent, very reliable player. I think he's somebody that, if you're a coach, you want somebody like that on your team. Like we just talked about, I really like Dominic Curry. Then I think Michael Lindsay is another guy that, if the Iron Man of the Year award were still in existence, I think Michael Lindsay would garner some consideration for that as well.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I like Kerry Reed. I mean, he played all 18 games, both sides of the ball. Game of the Year, you can kind of just go down any game that Cleveland played. My vote is their second game against Philly, that June 21st game when Shane Austin had over 400 total yards and had that last second Hail Mary.
I will say the first game, the Cleveland-Philadelphia first game, where they overcame the 17-point deficit.
Two
onside kicks.
Under a minute and a half.
Yeah. I've never seen anything like that.
Neither have I. I mean, a lot of these Cleveland games, I've never seen anything. I've never seen a team win so many close games in one season.
Yeah.
They had like three Hail Marys.
Yeah, I mean, they had a Hail Mary win on the road in Spokane, which is arguably the toughest
Death Valley
to play in. Yeah. And that'd be probably number three on my list of most impressive games this year.
They brought in their backup quarterback, Chris Dieker, that was his first long pass of the game. They didn't even put him in the bullpen to warm up. They just brought him out there.
So
it can pretty much go. Was there any game that Cleveland wasn't involved in that stood out to you as possibly a game of the year?
I was at the Arizona-Spokane game, and that was an electric atmosphere, as Spokane always is.
Yeah.
But that was really cool.
Was there a performance of the year? I think my vote goes back to that June 21st Cleveland at Philly game. Shane Austin, 420 total yards, 11 touchdowns.
Yeah, that was very impressive. For me, I would say Nick Davila's game against San Jose, where he came off the bench right after his father had passed away.
Oh yeah,
and that was Brett Favre's.
I was just gonna say, reminded me of Brett Favre on Monday night.
Exactly, and I mean, as soon as he came into the game, everything changed.
Yeah,
he just took over, and he was in the zone.
He kept the winning streak going with that win.
Yep.
I think another one that's worth mentioning, even though it was in a loss, Darius Reynolds' 7 touchdown game against Pittsburgh.
Absolutely.
I mean, a wide receiver can only have so much of an impact on a game, especially when he only plays one side of the ball, and 7 touchdowns against Pittsburgh. Even though, like I said, it was in a losing effort, they only lost by 3 points against one of the best teams in the league this year, Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, they scored 56 points and he scored 42 of them.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, what else can a guy do?
Exactly.
11 catches, 180 yards, 7 touchdowns.
Pretty good.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess just more individual plays was a catch of the year that stood out to you. I would say my vote came in week 9, LJ Castillo's one-handed catch against Philadelphia. So it's literally like he was just palming like a kiddie football.
Yeah, the ball did not move.
Yeah.
That was pretty crazy. For me, probably the coolest catch I saw was week 7, Douglas McNeil for the Portland Thunder.
Oh, that
reached across his body.
Yeah.
A one-handed catch against the Jacksonville
Sharks. His body was moving towards the wall. The ball was going away from the wall.
Passed it from behind him. Yeah. And completely outstretched. And he's a big dude. That, to me, was pretty impressive.
And then,
Dominic Goodman's
Hail Mary against the Soul.
Yeah.
So, I just want to remind everybody that the Rydell Defensive Player of the Year, the Russell Offensive Player of the Year, and the AFL MVP will all be announced on Thursday at the AFL Awards Ceremony in Cleveland. The award ceremony will be at the Quicken Loans Arena, home of the Cleveland Gladiators. And if you're in the Cleveland area, please feel free to stop by. Can't remind you enough, make sure to check out Arena Bowl 27 this Saturday. It all comes down to the one last game, Destiny versus Dynasty. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different storylines floating around, but 8 o'clock Saturday, August 23rd, Arena Bowl 27 in Cleveland, Gladiators versus the Rattlers. Game can be seen on ESPN, which will also be our first Arena Bowl on ESPN since 1997, when Seth Bonner and the Arizona Rattlers won that Arena Bowl.
I believe that was Kurt Warner's last game in the AFL. Long time ago.
Yeah, but good thing for Kurt, he was able to find another career somewhere else in the NFL.
Is that right?
Yeah. So, and if you want to interact with other AFL diehards, make sure to go on our AF Nation message board on our website, arenafootball.com. And make sure to like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Our Twitter and Instagram handles are at AFL Arena Bowl. And like I said, we'll be having other episodes of the podcast in Cleveland leading up to the Arena Bowl. And I want to thank BJ for joining me on the AF Nation Arena Football Podcast. And thank you for all of our listeners out there. Again, I am Chris Hopkins, and stay true, AF Nation.